So yes, the title of the presentation is Implementation Barriers and Fidelity in Implementing Evidence-Based Addiction Treatment. I'm just going to ask a question. Are there any service providers here who have implemented evidence-based practices? And how many of you have faced barriers in implementing those practices? All right, so that's really what this presentation is about. I have no financial relationships to disclose. And I would like to give a special thanks to the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation for funding the grant. Our IRB approval was through the Boston University Institutional Review Board. And a special thanks to the staff members who we interviewed for this project, without whom we would not have the data. So a little background on the overall project, and then I'll get into my specific analysis. This was a national study exploring staff adherence to evidence-based practices and the types of barriers they encounter and the resulting modifications made. We know that with the changes in the Affordable Care Act, that there's going to be an increased need for substance abuse services, and we also know that the substance abuse and addictions field is currently a little understaffed. And so kind of bringing these together, we definitely know that there needs to be an increase in the amount of both workforce development and workforce training that is done through the addictions. We also know that research indicates that the implementation quality of EBP strongly influences outcomes, and so staff who are more closely following those EBPs are going to have superior clinical results. Having specific adherence criteria to the EBPs is helpful in understanding whether, when the EBP is used, any sort of negative outcomes have to do with the intervention itself or failure to implement the intervention appropriately. And often it is the latter that accounts for negative outcomes, especially when people miss key elements when they're reproducing the evidence-based practice. When people miss these key elements, the outcomes tend to be less positive and potentially negative. So some context for the study. The Institute of Medicine issued a report in 1998 calling for the need to implement evidence-based practices in addiction treatment, and federal funding agencies like SAMHSA and NIDA have also made a call in the past decade to really make sure that people are using these evidence-based practices. And so because of this, there has been continued research looking at staff attitudes and experiences with implementing evidence-based practices. The methods of this study, we contacted community-based substance abuse treatment organizations who had received SAMHSA/CSAT awards between 2003 and 2008 who were implementing specific evidence-based practices. We contacted program directors, and they got us in touch with two of their staff members who had been implementing evidence-based practices, and we asked the staff members what were two key evidence-based practices that they used. We used semi-structured telephone interviews and asked people about a range of evidence-based practices. All of the interviews were tape recorded. The question to get information about the barriers was, describe barriers your project encountered in providing this treatment service, and we would use probes to dig a little deeper. So these asking people if they knew of barriers that were internal or external, rephrasing it, so things that got in your way for you to provide the services or challenges that you faced. And when looking at the barriers and modifications, we used mixed methods to get qualitative data on the barriers to service implementation and the resulting modifications, and we also used a 10-point ordinal scale to get a modification score, and then collected the average modification scores for each evidence-based practice to create mean modification scores for each EBP. An overview of my study specifically, looking at 296 community addiction treatment programs funded again by SAMHSA, and we did interviews with 522 frontline addiction treatment staff. We used qualitative analysis of the barriers and quantitative analysis looking at the types of barriers and comparing those to the modification scores. And the purpose of this is because we know that clinical staff who report higher levels of barriers in implementing evidence-based practices also report higher levels of modifications, and this study specifically is exploring the 10 most commonly reported evidence-based practices, the adherence to those evidence-based practices, and the barriers that they encountered. The research questions we asked were, which types of barriers are most commonly associated with the selected EBPs? Is there a relationship between the types of barriers identified in staff modification score? And what are the specific barriers related to EBP adherence that are associated with an increased modification score? For my analysis, we had over 50 EBPs from the entire sample, and our preliminary quantitative analysis showed that the 10 most frequently reported EBPs made up about 60% of our responses, and these EBPs are all commonly used and represent a range of interventions deployed in the field. The 10 EBPs, and there was a handout, so if you want more information about them, you can read the handout. I'm just going to go through them quickly, but we use motivational interviewing, case management, adolescent community reinforcement approach, assertive community treatment, the matrix model, cognitive behavioral therapy, seeking safety, integrated dual diagnosis treatment, motivational enhancement therapy, and peer-to-peer recovery support. We included, when we did the analysis, we looked at all of the barriers that were reported for the first EBP that staff reported, or the primary one that they were using, and we analyzed the list using Excel to organize and sort the information and look for themes and develop barrier categories. The categories we ended up going with were staff and organizational, so things like caseloads being too large, client-specific barriers like linguistic or cultural issues with the adaptation of the material, and logistical barriers like a lack of referral services or difficulty coordinating services with other organizations. And through the way that we came up with these categories, two were from the Nelson, Steele, and Mize article, which created the barriers of practitioner and setting and clients, and their third barrier, EBP itself, we changed to logistics to encompass things like the access to external client resources or coordinating services with other organizations. So looking at the frequencies, for what we found, you see that MI, there were significantly more MI respondents than any of the other EBPs. And you'll also see that it had one of the lowest modification scores along with case management, while MET and the peer-to-peer had the higher scores. The logistical barriers were the highest, followed by client and organizational and staff, but motivational interviewing actually had the highest number of organizational and staff barriers, while for the other two, logistics and clients, it's pretty evenly split between the other nine. To do the analysis of the barrier category and the modification score, we created dichotomous variables for each of the categories and used SPSS to run a one-way ANOVA to find an association between the barriers and the modification score. The only modification score that showed any sort of significant difference for the types of barriers was with MI, and that was client and logistical barriers. There were no other significant results found. So we know that barriers to EBP implementation are clearly associated with adherence. For MI, some of the most frequent barriers mentioned were client resistance, the lack of resources for referrals, and funding constraints, and these were really barriers found throughout a number of the EBPs reported. We also know that with other research we've done on this data set, staff who experience different types and levels of barriers make changes to the EBP in responding to these barriers, and so this is sort of a call to funding agencies of evidence-based practices in substance abuse to increase funding for technical assistance to staff. Some of the limitations of the study were that there was a small sample size for some of the interventions. I was the only one doing the categorical analysis of the barriers, and the barriers identified were based on staff perceptions along with the modification scores. So this was really a preliminary study which has some good suggestions for further research. And currently, we're working to do a qualitative study matching the types of barriers identified to the modifications identified to see if there's any sort of standards where if people are seeing like too high caseloads, they're making a specific modification across the board. And we're also going to include cultural barriers as their own separate category, because as we went through, we found a lot of linguistic or barriers that are associated with competing or different cultural beliefs. References. And I would like to thank the Center for Addiction Research and Services at the BU School of Social Work, that is where I work and was able to do this research, and the Boston University School of Public Health for funding me. So, thank you.